Blog Talk Radio.
Y'all ready for this? Of the NFL slate, and we have a huge show online here for about an hour, hour and 15 minutes, depending on how long we go with some debates in terms of the playoff scenario. We have the NFL Week 13 recap, and we also have the women's gridiron updates to come here in a couple minutes. So welcome to the show, Gridiron Beauties Radio on the air with Erica Lynn Anderson and Oscar F. Lopez. So Erica, you on?
I'm here.
Awesome. So Erica, we are in the mix of playoff mode now, so I'm going to go ahead and take care of the some of the women's gridiron updates that we got this week from the network of supporters that we got. And then from there, we'll go into the slate. And we also have on board today who we had last week, our Seattle Majestics owner and WFA coach, Scott McCarron, who will be coming up with us in a couple minutes here to discuss the NFL Week 13 slate. Big matchup for him, Seattle Seahawks versus New Orleans Saints. So it's going to be a huge, huge game. And hopefully that's going to turn out the same way that maybe New England and Houston turn out today. So we are going to be diving into that in a couple minutes here. So the women's game, there was a lot of action going on all through this weekend, November 30th. And then we're going into December 1st, going into next week. There's going to be some championship matchups as well. But this weekend, a lot of titles that were decided. So the Female Gridiron League of Queensland, we want to give a shout-out and congratulate the Gold Coast Stingrays, the ladies of the Gold Coast Stingrays, who upset the Logan City Jets, the 2012 inaugural champs, in a hard-fought matchup. You can get the information on our timeline on Twitter, as well as our Facebook page on the results there on the matchup. But congratulations to them. 12-8 win. Denise Pepe and as well as Lauren Evans. Hats off to the MVP of the game, which was Christy Moran, which is part of the Logan City Jets. So it seems like FGL, the Female Gridiron League of Queensland, will now be acquired and managed by Gridiron Queensland. So we'll see how that changes up next year on the third season. But congratulations to all the squads that were participating, the Kenmore Panthers, the Western Jaguars, the Logan City Jets, as well as the Stingrays. It's going to be a great third season. I know everybody was very competitive towards the end of the season, not just the Jets and the Stingrays, but everybody pretty much put a good fourth effort there. So shout out to the Female Gridiron League of Queensland for their amazing season. And we want to also give a thank you to Peter Barrar, which is their commissioner at this point, for giving us details on the information as well. And we go into Gridiron Victoria, which is the first season there, the inaugural season that just kicked off, and they just put together a women's league this year. Last year they put a competition where the Western Foxes, which is their initial team, went into play into a state-to-state match. But this year it was full-blown league. They faced the Northern Raiders, and they won. The Western Foxes, so congratulations to them as well for winning the inaugural Vic Bowl down in the Gridiron Victoria region. So congratulations to them. The Pretty Girls Football League taking place in Mexico, and that was yesterday. And the Ciclones undefeated in their season, 6-0 victory. They win by 50-31 against North Loyalty of Guadalajara. Congratulations to Ciclones. Ciclones basically top-notch team from the first match to the end. This is really a rematch. The first game was 35-0 when they beat North Molesby. So this is 50-31. So congratulations to the Ciclones of the PGFL. And we got them some props on the pininterest.com /gridironbeauty. So if you go there, you get the slate of some photos from that as well. The Gridiron New South Wales will be into their playoff mode this next weekend or so, coming up in this week and next week. UTS, pretty much the top-notch team. We also have Phoenix coming on board with a good effort. So the teams there are kind of vying for playoff positioning in their seeding. So hopefully at this point, the best team obviously being UTS and Tiffany Bosco's squad as well. So the LIBF was in Cuernavacas, and they're having their matchups, their two-game matchups there on the road. And the only result we got was Heat beating the Angels this weekend, but we will get the results of the Vipers taking on the Dioses Aztecas on our Twitter timeline as well as our Facebook. So that's pretty much the slate for the women's game. Championship glory for a couple teams here, the playoff mode and the LIBF, as well as the Gridiron New South Wales. So once that gets set, we will obviously pitch back all the information that are given to us by our network supporters. So let's go into the No Joke Football Huddle. And today in the No Joke Football Huddle with Erica and myself, we have Scott McCarron, who came back, Seattle Majestics owner and obviously coach in the WFA. So, Scott, are you on?
Thanks for having me back.
Awesome. So, Scott, welcome back. You're on with Erica and Oscar once again.
Good to talk to you guys.
All right. So, Erica, let's start it off. You were pretty involved with the Patriots and Houston, and it looked like kind of a similar game from last weekend.
Yeah. Yeah, they I don't know what it is about them. It seems like they kind of sit back on their heels first half. You know, they observe, Belichick's making notes on the sideline, and then they come out second half and, you know, they score on their first three drives of the second half, and they just, you know, boom, 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 Brady's hitting all his receivers. It's crazy, you know. There have been a lot of games like that this season. I'd like to see them, you know, get ahead early, but a win's a win, I guess. So,
Scott, did you get a chance to see that game too or not?
Yeah, I watched a little bit off and on, and I will say that I think one of the things that Belichick does such a great job of is Brady was getting pressured earlier in that game, and I'm sure some of the notes that he was taking on the sidelines was how to change protection scheme to buy him a little bit more time. It seemed like he was under duress a little bit early in the game, and then as the game went along, he started to have more and more time to be able to get the ball to the guys he needed to. I know Gronkowski chipped in with a big game again, as you would expect him to, but I really thought that was one key change that was made in that game that really gave Tom Brady some time to make the pass he needed to make and give New England a really big win coming off an even bigger win against Denver the week before.
Now, everybody I'll throw this out there. Do you feel Houston is just missing the boat to finish? Because they started strong, and every game they've lost, they've started somewhat okay. They just cannot seem to finish. They can't seem to get into that groove in the third and fourth, and really in the fourth quarter, they can't seem. So you think Houston has an issue with maybe with, late capitalizing on their efforts?
Well, I know we mentioned this a little bit last week. The number of injuries that have impacted that team overall, it does end up taking its toll. I mean, you see the same sort of thing that's happened to Atlanta, although to a much bigger degree this year. But I think what happens is that when you have those injuries, you have to start playing young players. You have to learn as a young player how to finish games. Doesn't matter at what level you play at, you have to learn how to finish games. And I think they have some young guys, specifically, you know, Case Keenum, who's pretty young. You know, they have to learn how to finish games in the NFL. And you know, it'll take some time, but, you know, ultimately I think if they stick with the plan, it's not like they've had a bad plan. If they just stick with their plan, get some guys healthy, again that they'll be their team will be okay next year.
So Scott, do you really feel a 3-point loss is they're that bad of a team? Because I don't think they're bad of a team. I don't think they've been bad of a team in 9 losses. So you know, given this loss, they only lost by 3. They were up 2 quarters. So I think you know they're on the right track. They just are not getting the breaks, I guess, to finish and to get that win.
Yeah, I mean, so a couple things on the offensive side of the football, and, you know, again, I don't want to rehash everything that we went over last week, but, you know, not having their lead running back, Arian Foster, who's been out with an injury most of the year, if not all the year. You know, Ben Tate's a fine running back, but, you know, he's not Arian Foster. They haven't had nothing to take anything, you know, I don't want to take anything away from DeAndre Hopkins, but they haven't had a real good threat opposite Andre Johnson for a couple years, you know, so that they, you know, consequently with a young quarterback, he's gonna be looking that way, targeting him. Owen Daniels has been hurt at tight end as well, so you know, I really don't think that they're that bad of a team. That they've just you know endured some injuries this year, and that's you know like I mentioned earlier, that's going to take its toll eventually. And you know, you're just not going to be able to hang with the big boys once you start incurring injuries to big players.
Erica, let's throw it out there. Gronk looked good, and then towards the end there, he kind of looked like he was banged up. Do you feel like he's going to be back next week, or what's your prognosis for him?
Yeah, I do. I think he will. He has, you can tell he gets more and more comfortable, and you can tell that he is kind of slipping back into his old role more and more as the season progresses. I'd have to really look at, I didn't see any big hits on him. I mean, normal hits, but he's such a big physical, if you will, tight end. It's just, he amazes me watching him play, you know. And going back to what you said, Scott, about, you know, about the Patriots, I think that's one of the reasons why they win the games they do is they really do play four-quarter football. And I think there's a lot of teams out there that can play really good, you know, 2 really good quarters of football. When you get a team like New England that can play 4 great quarters of football, it's hard to win against them. And I think that's part of the problem because I see it, you know, I thought in the Jets game, you know, some of these games, you can tell these teams just get tired and they can't keep up with the pace that New England sets even towards the end of the game. And I think that a lot of these teams need to work on that because if you want to win the big games, if you want to win these games, you need to make sure you're playing 4 whole quarters of good football.
Now, let's move on to something that was interesting, Scott. Let's dive into Carolina. They're on a roll, the opposite of Houston. What do you see Carolina at right now? I mean, obviously, if the playoffs started today, they would be into a seeding mode. What do you think of Cam Newton's progress so far this year? I mean, he started kind of on a bumpy road, but now he's elevated his game, and he's taken his team pretty much into a playoff mode right now. They're playing really good. Today it was 27-6 against Tampa Bay, and I know Tampa Bay is no top-notch competitive team, but with the same token, you know, they have been winning.
Yeah, I do think, to me, I watched quite a bit of that game. I think Carolina and Cam Newton and specifically actually looked a little bit more erratic than he has this week than in the past few weeks. And I don't, you know, I'm sure that some of that has to do with what Tampa Bay was doing defensively. They are a very good defensive team, Tampa Bay is. I know that you know, they get into some blowout games and what have you, but a lot of that is because of their offense, not necessarily their defensive play. But I do think Carolina has put themselves in a position to really, you know, have that first-round playoff game. They are going to beat a team in the first round that they are ranked lower than just because of their defensive play. It is perfect for the playoffs. Once they get into the playoffs, it's tough defensive play, good running game. Of course, when you have a quarterback that can run like Cam Newton does, you know, he has an element to that offense that, you know, I know we talked a lot about the zone read last week, but they do some things that's not so zone read type runs. It's more kind of lead and ISO runs with Cam Newton as the lead back, while having lead blockers in front of him. That, you know, he's a load to take down that quarterback when he's running the football. So I do think that I think right now they are fifth, if I remember correctly, in the conference standing. So they're going to play a team that that they're going to surprise in the first round of the playoffs. I would actually, you know, no matter who they play right now, I would actually pick Carolina to win. I don't care what the matchup is. They're playing that well right now.
Well, let me just explain to you right now. As it happened today, they get Tony Romo, and the chances of them winning is greater than anything else on the planet right now. That's all I have to say. Tony Romo.
Well, you know, the
opportunity
the one thing
is there for Tony Romo to screw it up and Carolina to take advantage.
I will say, you know, the one thing that Dallas hasn't done a very good job of over the years, or more Tony Romo hasn't done a very good job of over the years, is handling pressure from the defensive line, and that is exactly what Carolina does. So I think Dallas, while I know that they're a good running team, Carolina is going to give them a game, and I would pick Carolina to beat Dallas in that game.
So, Erica, Cam Newton, I mean, has he impressed you the last 7 weeks? I mean, because they're winning, and they're winning big in certain games, and obviously they've skated by in a couple, but overall the opposite of Houston. So what's your feeling on Carolina?
Yeah, I mean, you know, they've obviously won, what, their last seven or eight games or something like that. I'm just still not convinced. I know that sounds crazy or whatever, but I'm just still not convinced that they played the Buccaneers today. So I think saying, you know, oh, man, this was such a great win for them, it's like you beat the Bucs. I mean, really. That's like, you know, really the Patriots beating the Texans today. That's not a huge celebration because we should have won that game, you know. I think they're right there in the middle. That's where I would put them personally. I know their record says otherwise.
Between you and Scott, you are on my side that we take Carolina because of Romo, the Romo factor.
Yeah, for sure.
It's reality. Romo is bound to screw it up at some point. He's a good quarterback in regular season. He just doesn't prove He hasn't proved anything in the playoffs. That's the bottom line, I think.
I think Erica has a little bit of a short-term memory of the New England-Carolina game a few weeks ago.
Yeah, and we also had a blown call when Keekly was hugging Gronk in the end zone. I'm pretty sure that's pass interference.
So, Scott, you're rubbing on a bad wound right now. You're rubbing on a bad wound.
Yeah. You know, everybody likes to remind Seattle about the fail Mary from last year. And
that's true. Your point is very true.
Call, right?
Yeah, it still stings either way, right? On either side, it still stings.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I guess you were a Green Bay fan from last year, but yeah.
Yeah, it still stings. I'm not going to talk about anything beyond the most improved team in the whole 3 weeks, in the last 3 weeks, and let's take it off to the Jacksonville Jaguars taking on the Cleveland Browns, okay? But let's move on to something else because obviously that's already been proven. Jacksonville's won. We're good to go. And then congratulations to, I think it was Brown's receiver. Brown receiver was two back-to-back 200-yard receiving games. 480
Josh Gordon.
Never been done in the NFL. So trying to get his name, Josh Gordon, if I'm correct?
Josh Gordon.
In Cleveland. So we got to give him a shout-out for effort in the dog pound.
You know, he looked like a man among boys on that field today. That's how good he looked.
Yeah, and we got to give him a shout-out because playing on such an amazing team in Ohio, well, the Bengals are the better team in Ohio. But okay, I'm overstretching it a little bit there. But he's playing on a good team in Cleveland. They'll get better in next season. But, you know, great, great accomplishment, individual accomplishment.
Yeah, I think anytime you have a receiver go over 200 yards, it's pretty impressive. I don't care what team he's on or what team they play against. I mean, you know, he's still got to beat coverage, and he did repeatedly today.
Erica, you were saying?
Oh, I'm just surprised that 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 hasn't been done before. That actually really surprised me that that was the first time that, that back-to-back 200-plus receiving yard games have been done. I just thought it would have been done before now.
Yes, but no surprise that it's against the Jaguars. So
no,
let's just
not
go
at all.
There. Thank you to
yeah.
the Jaguars
yeah.
for setting that record. And it might not be set ever
yeah.
again, but thank you for the Jaguars for this season. And we have to congratulate them.
Maybe next year when somebody plays
them. Third win in a row or three wins in four games or something like that. I'm assuming that I don't keep track of that team in Florida as much as I do in Miami. So let's move on to Tannehill. Scott, what do you think of Tannehill today?
You know, Miami for me is they're kind of my kryptonite team, like in terms of being able to pick games for them or against them. They are the one team I can never pick right against. I thought they would win today, and they did pretty handily. I thought it was a pretty ugly win for them, even for as big as a victory as it was. I really don't think that they played all that well as a team, and I would imagine that that team will fade over the next few weeks as the games get tougher.
And today, I believe everybody was saying Mike Wallace earned his pay, so it's fair to say against the Jets, really? Come on.
Mike Wallace has been, let's be honest, he's been a bust since moving down into Miami and being the quote-unquote number one receiver down there. Overpaid? Absolutely. Number one receiver? I don't necessarily think so. Not at least not with that offense anyway. He still makes some bonehead plays too in the game. I didn't see a couple of the plays, but I was reading about them online. Just some bonehead plays in that game that he made, catches he could have made that he didn't. I don't know what's going on with him. I don't know if he's just, he's not the focal point of the offense anymore, and so he's going to pout or what. But I don't know. Too erratic
right,
of
so,
a team for me.
So, Scott, we're going to put you on the block right now. You're the coach. You are Rex Ryan, and you decide to take Matt Sims and take out Geno Smith. Can you explain that to us?
Well, it's interesting that I saw a stat before that game started that Geno Smith had not thrown a touchdown since, I believe, the first round of the baseball playoffs began or the first game of the World Series began, something to that effect.
Ouch.
I mean, the bottom line is, as a quarterback, you've got to be able to put points up on the board and, get your offense moving down the field. You can't turn the ball over, and he was doing that way too much. I don't know that Sims was the answer. I don't think Sims played all that well, but I think they just got to a point to where they couldn't do anything else with Geno Smith at this point, and so why not give somebody else a chance? I would imagine that you won't see Geno Smith start for them for the next few weeks unless something happens to Sims. I would imagine they'll give Sims the reps this week and let him start the game next week. But Geno just needs he just needs time to develop, probably under a different coaching staff. Hopefully they bring in a quarterback guy that can, that can really teach him the NFL game. He's got all the tools to be successful. It's just a matter of that translating onto the field.
All right, so, Scott, you tell us, since you're the coach, Rex Ryan removed from this season, do you think, or does he stay on board for another year?
I think he'll be fired. I think the general manager there, is Idzik, if I remember right, and came over from Seattle.
Mm-hmm.
I think he'll let Rex Ryan go, and he'll bring in his own guy next year.
And I think they have David Gerrard as third string. Do you think they'll start him before Sims next week if they make
no,
that move?
No, not at all. No, not at all. I mean, David Gerrard was he was having back issues when they signed him, and then they weren't sure if they were going to keep him on, put him on IR. And David Gerrard, I've seen enough of him over the years to know that he's not very good anymore. And I would imagine that Sims will be the guy for the foreseeable future until they can get into the off season and get Geno some coaching.
All right, so you know what? Let's move on to the McDonald's payday, Joe Flacco. Surprising, turned his team around here in the last couple of weeks. is earning his so-called, you know, pay. And 22-20 over Pittsburgh. Steelers literally were doing pretty well up to this point. And then you have the Tomlin issue going on there with some sort of fine that I was trying to research before I got on here. So I don't know if any of you guys know that, but I guess the Pittsburgh coach was, I don't know, he said something or something came up. But Baltimore is starting to maybe pick up a little bit of their stride from last season, and they're getting to a playoff mode. And I'm not, you know, I'm not being real here because they're 6-6, so it's not like they're, you know, doing anything but being .500 at this point. So, what do you guys think Baltimore will do within the next couple weeks here? Erica, go first.
I don't think they're going to do much of anything. Flacco's not going to win his or not going to earn a salary until he wins 5 more Super Bowls. That's what it's going to take for him to earn that huge inflated salary of his. That Mike Tomlin thing, walking out, you know, getting on the field and almost hitting a kick returner, I don't know what the deal that was. They could be fine and lose a draft pick. It's possible. The Ravens have always kind of skated by, right? They've never really been a truly outstanding team. Even when they won the Super Bowl last year, they just kind of, no one expected them to get there, and they won, and they won, and then, you know, they found themselves in the Super Bowl. So I'm not going to completely rule them out, but I'm not impressed with them at all, and I just feel like they're just completely mediocre this year. And Flacco just, he has never impressed me. What possessed them to do what they did with how much they signed him for, I'll never know, but I just don't see them doing a whole lot in the next coming weeks.
Now, Scott, if you had that type of money that Baltimore had, would you throw it on your quarterback like that?
Well, they kind of got put into a situation where they had to. I'll be shocked if he ever sees all of that money that that they signed him to. I would imagine that we'll find out about some clause that's built into his contract where he's got a roster bonus of, you know, $15 million or what have you, and they'll end up letting him go or renegotiating that contract.
But so he's not going to be working at McDonald's anytime soon. Is that what you're telling us?
No, I don't think he'll be working at McDonald's anytime soon. But I don't think he's going to earn all that money that he signed that contract for anyway. And I do agree with Erica. I do think that, you know, Baltimore, another 6-6. They're a very mediocre team. They haven't been able to run the ball this year like they were last year. Their offensive line has really played poorly this year. Defense has been okay, and that's for the most part really what's kept them in games, because their offense hasn't been doing anything. They've got Minnesota at home coming up next week. Then they go on the road to Detroit. I expect that game to be a loss. Then they play at home against New England. I expect that game to be a loss. And then they play on the road to end the season at Cincinnati. I would expect that game to be a loss. So they'll be lucky if they go 2-2 over the next 4 games. I would expect they'll be 1-3 and finish the season 7-9.
Yeah, that's my prediction, too. I think that that's pretty fair to say that that's what's going to happen. Now, if they did go into a playoff mode today, they would face, I believe, Indianapolis on my bracket that I have. So they would, we go into Andrew Luck's world here, and today they take care of Tennessee, which is really expected because Tennessee has not ran the ball very well. And on top of that, I think it was Fitzpatrick starting, and he's up and down type of quarterback anyways. So what do you, Scott? Let's start with you. What do you feel about Indianapolis at this point, given their situation, 8-4? They would be third seed if the playoffs started today.
Yeah, you know they've played well at times and absolutely horribly others. I don't know if it's youth or, I mean, Andrew Luck sometimes, you know, he's looked really, really good in games, and then he's just seemed like he's been off over the last 4 weeks or so. That something hasn't been right. He hasn't been playing like someone would expect him to play. They had a home game today against Tennessee. I thought they kind of got away with a win. I thought actually Tennessee played better than what Indianapolis did in that game. Sometimes playing at home allows you to get away with things you wouldn't otherwise get away with on the road. To me, I think they will fall back to the medium, another 8-4 right now. But, I I can't see them going 3-1 over their next four remaining games, and finishing out with 11 wins. I just don't think it's going to happen.
All right, Erica, what's your feeling with Andrew Luck and the Colts at this point? I mean, they're not bad. They've been pretty productive. They beat Peyton Manning, probably the highlight of the whole season right now for them.
No, they beat the Seahawks.
Well, yeah, but I'm just talking about, the big-name quarterback, because Russell's still evolving, in terms of his getting to that level, to the high level of, expecting him to be at that level. I'm just talking about, a proven quarterback. Probably the only thing that they've done is there, and even then they could have lost it if the Broncos would have played a little better in that regard. But the bottom line is, Erica, they would be third seed right now, and they would face the Ravens.
Yeah, I like the Colts against the Ravens. It surprised me because I really feel like they started the season really strong and then kind of petered out a little bit. But I like Andrew Luck. I think he's a future Hall of Famer. Honestly, I really do. I see the potential in the guy. It's all there. I like Chuck Pagano. I think he's a good coach. I think they have all the tools in place. And I think that if they, if they played their game against the Ravens, I would pick them to win over the Ravens for sure. Because I like that team. I think it's solid, and I think they've got a lot of talent.
Now, Scott, let's move on to the AFC West in this motion right now, because Kansas City, as good as they had played, and then they run into this roadblock called better competition, as most people would say right now. Alex Smith probably not as a level as Russell Wilson or a Brady or a Manning or a Luck in a lot of ways in some people's eyes. Do you think Kansas City, this is it for them for the next couple of weeks? I mean, because they're facing better competition within their division. If they face the Chargers, they're facing, obviously Rivers is nothing to kind of go over, but, he's pretty good consistently. And he loses games based on the same way that, Houston's doing games. They just can't finish. Do you think that Kansas City has their numbers up now? I know they might get into a playoff. They're 9-2. But at this point they would be fifth seed, not number one seed as they were in the last 6-7 weeks.
To me, Kansas City is a team that has been shown to be very one dimensional over the last few weeks. Alex Smith is not a franchise quarterback. He's kind of a dink and dunk type quarterback. He can use his legs to move around a little bit, but that's not something that Andy Reid wants his quarterback doing. Let's face it, their offense focuses on running back with Jamal Charles, who's obviously very, very good. Their defense has been what I would say been the more impressive story about their team, and unfortunately they're starting to get dinged up on that side of the ball. And being a little bit exposed there because of it now over the last few weeks, with San Diego, putting up 41 points on them. Denver's put up another 35 this week. Their defense is starting to get exposed, and even with their offense being one dimensional, they're not surprising teams anymore like they were. They've got some very tough games. It might not seem like it on paper, but they've got some very tough games coming up to finish out the season. They've got at Washington next week. Then the real big game, I think, for them is going to be at Oakland. I don't care what you say about the Raiders. Going to Oakland has always been a tough game, no matter what, between those two teams. And they play at home against Indianapolis and then on the road at San Diego. So those last three games, I think, are going to be incredibly tough games for them. I think they'll be a lot tougher than what it may seem on paper. They're still, I wouldn't say they're the top of the class, obviously, with their record and their performance against some of these, the upper echelon teams, but they're still a good team. They're better than mediocre. I would expect them to finish in the top, four or five rankings, by the time the season's done and over with.
So Scott, do you think they missed the playoffs? Do you think they might fall?
No, I don't think that team misses the playoffs. They're they'll be 9-3 after this game versus versus Denver, assuming something crazy doesn't happen at the end of this game. If they finish 9-3, I think, you know, over the next four games, they could probably go 2-2 out of those games, and maybe 3-1. I would imagine that they'll finish with no fewer than 11 wins, and that should be good enough to get into the playoffs.
So they might be a top four seed, 3 or 4 seed versus the 5th seed right now currently. So they might just be right.
There's division winners that have to go into play there. So I would imagine that they'll probably fall 5th or 6th by that. By that token.
So, Erica, what do you think of the Chiefs right now? Do you think that, like Scott's saying, they just kind of ran into some better competition shorthand here, and they should run out their schedule and obviously make the playoffs?
I think they're playing some tough teams. I agree they have a tough schedule. The Broncos, obviously, that's being in the same division, that's tough, man. The Broncos are a phenomenal team, and I think the Chiefs are, I wouldn't say just good, but and I disagree. I think Smith is a franchise quarterback. I think he's great. I think he needs some better protection. I was watching parts of that Broncos Chiefs game, and he was being hurried, and he needs some better protection later in the game, and he needs receivers need to do a little bit of better job at catching the ball, but I think they definitely make the playoffs. And I agree, their schedule's tough. Chargers, Oakland, and I can't remember the other team you said, but I don't know. I disagree with everyone. Everyone thinks the Chiefs are not the real deal, and I've disagreed all season. I think they are. There you go.
All right. So, Scott, let's throw it to you now. If they started today, they would face Andy Dalton and the Bengals. So what do you think of the Bengals right now? I mean, they own the division because Pittsburgh's kind of on a slide. Baltimore, even at 6-6, still question marks there. And we're not even going to consider Cleveland because, obviously Cleveland is Cleveland. So Cincinnati, you think a surprise if they get into the playoffs?
No, I don't think it's a surprise. Their defense is very, very good. And their offense I'd like to see Dalton play a little bit better, but they can run the football. They've got A.J. Green, who is a force to be reckoned with on his own. But having a defense as good as it is, they will probably have a home game in the first round, and playing there at home with that defense, that could be the best first round matchup that we see if the season ended today and those two teams played each other in the first round. That would be one hell of a game to watch between those two teams. Both defenses very, very good. I actually would expect Kansas City to win that game, though. I think that Cincinnati's kind of they've just been okay down the stretch the last few games. They haven't really played all that well offensively, and that's at least one thing that Kansas City has been somewhat is consistent on offense. I would expect it as their defensive guys that are hurt get healthy, that defense will start to round into shape again before the end of the year.
All right, now. The Green Bay lost Aaron Rodgers. You have the situation in Chicago with the quarterback mix. So I'll throw this out to you, Erica. NFC North, are the Lions the team that goes to the playoffs?
That's hard to say. That comp or that division right now is pretty competitive. But, yeah, I think with the turmoil that's in Chicago and Green Bay, I think that Detroit's probably out of that division. I think they're probably the most consistent right now with Stafford and Bush and, Megatron all play there. They haven't, been switching places like the other teams. They haven't been out and putting new people in. So I think the Lions, I think that's a pretty good bet is to say the Lions go from that division, yeah.
So, Scott, you think that Bush coming into this year really benefited them? Because they already had Johnson, and Stratford has been pretty decent in terms of, you know, not turning the ball over, not doing anything crazy anymore. Do you think they're the front runners right there in that division to win it and then maybe make the playoffs? Because they're 7-5 right now. And if they made the playoffs right now, they would get Frisco at home.
Yeah. I think Detroit is the absolute team to win that division. It doesn't sound like Aaron Rodgers is going to be back in the next couple of weeks. Even if Chicago gets Cutler back, their problem hasn't been offense. It's been their defense is just decimated with injuries, and the unfortunate thing for them is they can't stop anybody. So for me, Detroit, Reggie Bush is a perfect fit in that offense. He can operate as a receiver and a running back. He's perfect on turf. They do some things offensively to get him involved, both as a receiver and as a running back. When they are operating on full bore, their offense is going to be tough to stop in the playoffs.
Yeah, and you get Johnson in double coverage, it makes no difference. I mean, when they start putting that aspect of it, I mean, it's been proven game after game after game. He's got the leaping ability that, you know, it's obviously going to give him the benefit. So, but I agree with you guys. I think Detroit. I wouldn't say they're for real, but they're playoff bound for sure.
Well,
the
Lions got Burleson back at receiver this week. I know he didn't do anything in this last game, but they have him back as a receiver. That'll help balance things out offensively with Bush being healthy at running back. And let's not forget their defensive front seven has got to be some of the top. I mean, they've got to be one of the top defensive front sevens in the NFL. I know the backside of their defense isn't great, but they're going to create so much pressure up front with their front seven guys that they'll be adequate at least.
So, Erica, what do you think?
I think getting Cutler back would be a detriment to the Bears. Burleson's definitely I like him too. I've always liked Burleson. I saw, though, after the game that Reggie Bush had his knee wrapped in ice after the Lions game. That could have been just a precaution. I'm not sure, but after the game he was all wrapped up, his knee was. So I don't know. He's kind of injury prone. That's always been my issue with Reggie Bush, is that he is injury prone, and, you know, you look at how many years he's had to sit out or how many games, he's not a really reliable back.
So the durability is a question for you.
It is,
the durability,
definitely,
is a
question.
All right. Scott, let's dive into Philadelphia. You put in this new kid, Nick Foles, you know, has made a tremendous impression on the league itself, not just on his team. Do we release Michael Vick?
Yeah, I mean, you have to at this point. It sounds like Foles is a franchise guy, and I mean, I have to eat a little bit of crow on him. I was not a fan of his at all when he played at Arizona. I thought he was an overrated quarterback coming out of college, coming into the NFL. You know, a lot of the routes that he threw in college were little wide receiver screens, little bubble screens, little hitch routes, that kind of thing. And I never really saw him being able to throw the ball downfield like he is now. And maybe that was just a product of the offense that he played in there. But he seems like the perfect quarterback for that job, for that team. And, you know, he's operating the offense exactly how Chip Kelly wants. And, you know, hey, their offense is tough to stop. When you have a quarterback that, I know we talked about turnovers earlier, when you have a quarterback that's not turning the ball over and that guy has yet to throw an interception this year, you're going to win a lot of games. You're going to put a lot of points up on the board. So they're going to give Dallas a run for their money before the end of the season here.
Now, today they beat the Arizona Hot Cardinals. I got a lot of people tweeting me, the Cardinals, Cardinals, and then the Cardinals sort of come back to earth in a way. So where do you see Arizona in the NFC West, Scott, before we go to Erica?
You know, we talked about them last week. You asked me if I thought that they were for real or if they were fakers. And, you know, I think I said last week that I thought that they were a team that was for real with as good as their defense can play. And that Carson Palmer hadn't been making mistakes. And, of course, then he comes back and he throws two interceptions in this game. I don't know if he had a fumble or not in that game. I can't recall off the top of my head, but you know, turnovers offensively for them is going to be what's going to be the detriment for their team. Their defense is good enough to keep them in a lot of games. It's just a matter of whether or not they can keep Carson Palmer from turning the ball over.
Yeah.
I mean, San Francisco is getting hot now. You know, I know we talked about them last week. How I thought they would improve over the next few weeks. They'd get better as a team offensively and get better as a team defensively as some of their guys have gotten healthy. They got both Smiths back on the defensive side of the football. And while I would have said that Arizona could have given San Francisco a run for their money towards the end of the year, I think San Francisco is going to pull away after seeing them play today.
Erica, what do you think of the Cardinals? I mean, they were really good, and then all of a sudden now, I mean, they didn't lose by much. They lost by 3 points. But on the road, they lose. So it's like, you know, I think they're going to be a decent team, third place NFC at this point. They own the spot.
Yeah, they're a mediocre team, I think. They're also in a tough division, I would say. The NFC West is, you know, got the Seahawks and the 49ers are good teams. And like Scott said, you know, the Seahawks are kind of hitting their stride now. The 49ers are kind of hitting their stride now. I like the Cardinals, though. I definitely like them. I like to see them win. I think that Palmer, he's never impressed me. I think that's my hesitation with really endorsing the Cardinals is my hesitation with their quarterback. He's never impressed me. But the Arizona, since Warner left, I mean, that was really kind of his tail end of his career, but it seems like they've had trouble really finding a good fit for them in the quarterback position. I think if they could find someone that could get Fitzgerald the ball consistently and really throw those good passes, I think that we would see a phenomenal team. That's my opinion.
This is a perfect example of what Carson Palmer gives you at quarterback, okay? The guy throws for 300 yards today, 3 touchdowns, but 2 picks, has a fumble that he lost, and took 5 sacks. And the unfortunate thing is that is a Carson Palmer that teams see too much of when they have him at the helm, and that is what causes their team to not do so well from an overall record perspective, because you have this Jekyll and Hyde thing from him at the quarterback play. When he's on, and he's very good when he's on, then the team will perform well. But when he's off, he's all over the map. And today was a perfect example of that game, even though they only lost by 3. But that is a perfect example of what Carson Palmer is as a quarterback.
That's
yeah,
phenomenal.
I agree with you. Exactly. Let's get into the big matchups here. If the playoffs started today, Scott, we'll throw it your way because obviously you're in rainy Seattle and probably smiling right now given the Niners just beat my Rams. So Seattle 10-1 would face New Orleans. Where have you seen that before?
Yeah, you probably wouldn't be too surprised, but there's people all over the place on Facebook and Twitter and, you know, anything you can think of that are bringing up Beastquake again. You know, New Orleans, this is actually a game that scares me. I know we're playing at home, and I know we're playing at home on Monday night, but having Brandon Browner go down and Walter Thurman go down at corner, that's corner number 2 and corner number 3 for us in terms of the depth chart. And all of a sudden you start to look at having corner number 4 and 5 have to be in the field for what I would assume would be most of the game that the Hawks will have to play in nickel defense. And Drew Brees is too good of a quarterback to not be able to take advantage of that. So, you know, my only hope is that we can get pressure on him to have him try to get rid of the ball quicker than what he wants to. But this is a game that scares me. I definitely think New Orleans can win this game, even at home, even on Monday Night Football.
Now, Scott, to your point, is this a prep game for them? I mean, if New Orleans walks in Monday and beats them, is this something for them to look forward to? Because if down the road in the playoffs, they have, you know, Seattle, I'm talking about, they have faced the NFC South pretty much in each round in the last, 2 years? So if the scenario plays out, they might face New Orleans once again.
Yeah, and the hard part is that if everything played out and, you know, number one and number two faced each other in the conference championship and that just happened to be Seattle and New Orleans, the really bad thing is that the Hawks would have to go to New Orleans and play down there if they were to lose this game just because New Orleans would hold the tiebreaker.
Right.
That's why this is a massively important game for Seattle to win. I just don't think lots of people are saying, hey, Seattle at home, they never lose. Russell Wilson hasn't lost a game at home since he's been in the NFL. All this talk. But, you know, let's not overlook how good New Orleans has been since Sean Payton's gotten back and Drew Brees is rolling. Their defense is playing well. They have a lot of weapons on the offensive side of the football. And especially with you know, taking the hit at cornerback that we have, this is a very tough situation for the Hawks to be in right now. I think offensively they'll be fine. I think they'll be able to move the football in New Orleans. It's the defensive side, which has been our strength this year, that actually has me worried based off of, you know, who we lost. Now, maybe that, you know, Pete Carroll is a good defensive mind. He'll scheme for it. They'll figure it out. I would imagine that what you'll see is you'll actually probably see Earl Thomas play a little bit of slot corner for us this week with Richard Sherman on the outside. I know there's been talk about having Richard Sherman cover Jimmy Graham at tight end, but, you know, the Hawks don't really do that. That's not really their thing. They usually let the corner play his normal position, and I would imagine that they'll bring Earl Thomas down to play the little corner at Texas, and that they'll allow him to play some slot corner stuff down in man press and allow Cam Chancellor to play a deep safety, so it kind of keeps them within their scheme. I have a feeling that we'll see more of that than what we will with this talk of having Richard Sherman play inside and cover Jimmy Graham one-on-one throughout the game. I just don't think that that'll happen much.
Yeah. So, Erica, New Orleans seems to be hitting their stride, and to Scott's point, they are a team that takes advantage of mistakes. And Drew Brees, when he's on his game, obviously he's one of the probably the best quarterback you can see out there in the line of Brady and Manning. So, you think New Orleans right now walks into Seattle and squeaks by, maybe get a win?
I think it's possible for sure. I think this is probably one of the toughest games the Seahawks will play all season. I'm impressed with the Seahawks defense, and like Scott, you know, talked about the cornerback situation in Seattle, and Brees capitalizing on that with Graham and, you know, these other threats they have. It is really possible that the Saints come away with a win. The Seahawks do have that advantage with being at home and how loud their stadium is. It's hard for teams to go in there and play there, so they do have that advantage. But, you know, the Seahawks need to be really careful with how they play them. This is definitely, like every football game, but especially this one, this is not something for them to trifle with, to take lightly at all, and I don't think they are. But this is, I think, a real test for Seattle. This is probably the hardest, the biggest test they've had all year, for sure.
Yeah, and you know, the whole basis out of this whole thing is, they're two quality teams. We can't take that away. Like Scott says, you know, the quarterbacks are really good. The issue will be secondary coverage, or like he says, you know, the ability to cover a tight end, a quality tight end, and then given some issues, like he says, the concern there of shifting people around could be a concern there overall. But Sean Payton, Scott, Sean Payton coming back, that really revitalized this franchise. I mean, they're like literally night and day from last year.
Well, I mean, from an offensive perspective, you have to give Sean Payton a lot of credit. I know Breeze is at the helm, and you know, he's the one that has to make the plays. But Sean Payton, from a play calling side of things, is unbelievable as a play caller. I don't think, I mean, I know he gets a lot of credit in the NFL and a lot of credit for the success of the Saints. I still think it's understated how good of an offensive mind he really is. You know, he does some things to move guys in positions and get defenses to move a certain way, just based off of what he's seen on film, and it allows for big plays to happen. You know, he's going to put his guys in position offensively to be able to make big plays down the field, which is what they thrive on. And yeah, I mean, great job by them having him come back, but then also, you know, let's not forget about the defensive side of the football either. Where they've improved immensely over last year as well. You know, maybe it's the quote unquote Ryan scheme. I don't know, but they're a much better defensive team this year than what they were last year.
Yeah, and I think that's the key right there, like you're saying. But the coaching is a big factor there. I think it brings them back to a level of you know, that they were a year and a half ago. And given Atlanta's falter, like you said, with injuries and everything else that's happened there. Carolina, really, in that division, is the number two, and you can say that now because they've been played really well. Tampa Bay rebuilding. But, you know, for a playoff matchup, it's a good matchup for Monday night, and it's probably a rematch at some point down the playoffs like we're talking about.
Well, you could see, you know, so this week New Orleans plays here, and then they play Carolina next week. And if New Orleans loses this game versus Seattle, they could be in for a really big trap game next week versus Carolina and let Carolina catch them coming off a loss Monday Night Football. I can't remember what the stat is exactly, but I know that teams that lose on Monday Night Football, there's some sort of thing where they have a tendency to lose the following week's game, no matter whether or not they play at home or on the road the following week. But that could be a really big trap game and another feather in Carolina's cap, which I think would give them the division lead at that point.
Yeah, no, you're right. It would give them the division lead. And that would be surprising, especially with Cam Newton playing the way he's playing right now. It is, I guess, Monday night, if you want to consider it, it is New Orleans' game to lose because they should win it based on what you said right now with, you know, being a good team. But if they lose it, yeah, they got a concern going next week, which obviously facing their division rival once again.
Before we jump off that game, there are some benefits that we haven't mentioned that are in Seattle's favor. I know Erica mentioned that we're at home and it's really loud, but let's not forget we're coming off a bye. Coming off a bye week, given the staff an extra week to prepare for this game, allowed them to bring in some secondary players to give them some depth. There to be able to prepare from that aspect. So I don't want to say that I'm not – that as a Hawks fan that I'm not comfortable going into this game. I just don't think it's as much of a chalk-up win as what people may have given it, just with it being a home game and us rarely losing home games. I think it's going to be a really, really good matchup. And the other thing is that it's supposed to be very cold here tomorrow night. For the game, there's been some talk of snow out here as well. I don't think it will happen downtown where the stadium is, but I could imagine that would give Breeze a little trouble at quarterback. I don't think he's a very good outdoor QB. So there's some things going in our favor as well.
Well, given that you're coming off of, like you said, a real rest, sometimes that's a bad thing, and other times it's a good thing. So we're assuming Seattle's in a good state coming off a bye and going into against New Orleans. But it should be a great game. Overall, two good quarterbacks. Defensively, they're somewhat, you know, good squads. And like you said, there's questions obviously on both ends with some issues. But overall, I think it's a matchup, a good matchup. Erica, if you had to pick the Seattle-New Orleans, are you taking Breeze or are you taking Wilson?
I'm taking I'm taking Breeze. Yeah, I'm taking the Saints over Seattle.
Yeah. I believe we feel the same way, Scott, just to let you know. I think we're going with Breeze. Not that we're going to bash you in Seattle, but I really think it's, to your point, it's really their game to lose. I don't know if Breeze is, this late in the season, I don't know if he's, you know, up to that task. Not to say that Seattle is not ready. I think they're ready. He might squeeze by and get a win, like, to your point.
But it's not because you picked Denver over New England last week either.
Well, let's make it a point next week that if the Hawks win, I'll come on and gloat a little bit, and if they lose, I'll come on and listen to you guys listen to you guys jump off the Hawks bandwagon and make me crow a little bit.
Well, Scott, we're all friends here, so we're not going to make you do anything crazy like that.
Yeah.
But, you know, if you want to come on to the show, you're always welcome to come on to the show, whether it be on a beatdown or on a win, because we're that friendly.
Just a little friendly rivalry. That's okay.
Yeah. I don't have any bitterness against your team. I'm not in your division. I got nothing to lose.
I'm not in your division. Other than the fact that I hate Pete Carroll.
I was telling Erica before the show that you can just put four nails in our coffin already, and we're just barely breathing.
Well, I mean, the Rams, I know we talked about this, the Rams, they were at a point where they had to rebuild. Obviously, losing Sam Bradford at quarterback, I don't know what you think of him as a player, but, you know, the franchise is invested in him, and to have him go down when he did in the season is certainly – you know, through a kink in their offense's ability to mesh with each other. They have so many young players on the offensive side of the ball that, you know, it takes time for those guys to get on the same page with each other. And defensively, you know, I think that they will, you know, they lost Cortland Finnegan at cornerback, which is, you know, he's a key to their secondary play, what they want to do in the secondary. But I don't think that they're going to be as bad of a team next year as what they have been this year. Jeff Fisher's a good coach. I'm a big fan of his, and you know, the guy wins no matter what. I think he'll get that franchise turned around.
Erica, what were you saying?
I don't know. I'm sorry.
My Rams left everybody speechless.
So
this is horrible.
I apologize. I'm a little out of it tonight. I had a ton of homework, so I apologize to everybody.
Well, we will get you off the air soon here, so you can go back to homework. not a big deal. You know what? It just seems like this week was really a separation of who's moving on to next season and who's really moving on to a playoff mode. Does everybody get that feeling this week? Erica?
Yeah, I think so. I think this is definitely the time of the year where you separate the good teams from the great teams, and I think we're seeing that. I think this is when teams start to collapse and other teams start to really kick it into gear and win their game. So I would agree with that.
Scott, do you think that right now, week 13, big factor, and you're looking at Denver and New England, hopefully, at this point? I mean, if the matchup works out, they're going to be the Seattle of and New Orleans of the NFC matchup. So Broncos and Patriots, you feel that that's going to – we're going to see another Peyton Manning, another Manning Brady in obviously to decide to go into the playoffs?
Those are the two best teams in the AFC, you know, both offensively and defensively. You know, they have both sides, but both sides play well. You know, especially if they're playing at home, which it looks like they will be for the first couple of rounds of the playoffs, it's going to be tough to you know, it's always tough to play in Denver, in Mile High. It's not called Mile High anymore, but it's going to be tough to play in Denver in that altitude no matter what. New England playing in the cold, you know, plus – I give Belichick a lot of credit. While I don't necessarily care for him personally, I think the guy is a phenomenal coach. He does a lot of things really, really well. He gets his team prepared, and I mean, you can't argue with the guy's success. So, Yeah, I would imagine that those two teams you'll see playing in the AFC Championship.
So, Erica, the Patriots, to you, you're obviously the fan of this team. Do you feel like at the end we're going to see another Brady Manning?
Yeah, I do. I think like Scott said, I think they're the two best teams in the AFC right now. And I think that you see that matchup. Hopefully we can get him at home again. Manning doesn't have the greatest record in the cold. And it's cold in Boston this time of year. So I think it would be great to get them at home again and see if we can get another New England Super Bowl.
Yeah. What's the Sunday night game? I forgot to write it down here. Does anybody got the Sunday night game right now?
It's Redskins Giants. Okay, that is. Whose idea was to schedule that? I don't know, but.
Oh, I'm sorry, Erica. I will correct you. That was a flex game that was issued by NBC. So great job to them.
Okay. Yeah, it's a good job. The NFC East is being featured on primetime.
Well, we gotta have a Manning boy on primetime. We can't go out with that. I mean, it's either Romo or Manny. I mean, it's very rare when we have somebody else going on it. But let's go, Scott. Tonight, is Eli ready to take the next jump this year and maybe take his Giants into a 500 mode or better?
This is like the lesser of two evils game here. You have Washington's offense, which has really been putrid. The Giants' offense, which has really been putrid. They're two teams that are not playing well. I don't know what they're doing on Sunday Night Football, aside from it being a rivalry game, but this late in the season, you would think that they would have flexed another game into this slot.
So, Scott, are you acknowledging right now that you're not watching this tonight?
No, I will probably have it on, but it won't be a game that I'll be paying a whole lot of attention to. There's not really a whole lot riding on it for the sake of the playoff scenario.
And Erica, you are telling me that tonight you are doing your homework and not watching Manning and RG3.
Well, I got my homework done, but I still will not be watching this game. I think I'd rather wash my hair than watch this game. So.
Oh, you guys are amazing. This is awesome. Because I'm not going to be watching
it either,
because I'm doing something else.
I think I'd rather watch this game tonight.
And not to say that Eli Manning's not a championship quarterback, because he is. And not to say that RG3 is not invincible, because he is. So there's
let's call it what it is. The Giants are not the team that they have been over the last few years. I don't know if Coughlin just won out his welcome in New York, but neither of these teams are going anywhere. Neither of them are going anywhere fast. And, like I said, I don't know what they're doing on Sunday Night Football other than it being a quote-unquote rivalry game.
All right, so, Scott, let's call it right now. Rex Ryan goes first or Tom Coughlin goes out this year at the end of the year?
Well, I actually think Rex Ryan will be the first to go over Tom Coughlin. I mean, Ryan's been kind of on the hot seat for the last 2 years. Hasn't been sure whether or not he's going to be the head coach, not be the head coach. He's getting replaced, not getting replaced. And with the Jets bringing in Idzik from Seattle this last offseason, I would expect Rex Ryan to be gone. I think Idzik gave him a chance, gave him his year. To try to work out the quarterback situation. Rex Ryan didn't want to go with Geno Smith at the beginning of the year. Idzik wanted him to be the starter at quarterback. So just seems like a general manager and a head coach that aren't on the same page with each other, and I would imagine that Rex Ryan will go shortly after the season is done and over with. While Coughlin, I mean, he's had longevity there. He's had successful teams in the past, and they seem to kind of have this late season success, which kind of keeps his job safe. And it seems like they're kind of on that same path this year, although I know they won't make the playoffs, but it seems like it'll be just enough for him to keep his job.
I'm not gonna ask Erica that, because she already answered that. Ryan is out in New York for sure.
Yeah.
So Scott, go ahead and plug in your. Training camp, I believe, is your camp, right, coming up on this next week or the week after?
Yeah, we actually have our final training camp coming up next Saturday. We're all very excited. We've had quite a few sign-ups over the last few days for the last training camp. We're doing a half-price promotion on the camp for the last one. So that would be December 7th from 11 o'clock to 2 o'clock. And, we're pretty excited about it as an organization. We're doing a lot of local marketing plug this week and in this last week with newspaper ads and radio spots and what have you. So my wife and I are going to be on a local radio show on 950 KJR on Friday afternoon talking about the organization as well. So it's a pretty exciting time for our team, and I know that the players, the returning players from last year, they're all pretty pumped to get back out on the field. I know we feel as an organization there's a pretty sour taste left in our mouths after their last playoff game, and we expect to be a team competing for the championship next year.
Awesome. So you can find that probably on Twitter as well as Facebook, right? And then you can go to theseattlemajestic.com to still register. Is there a cutoff date for the registry?
Nope. You can actually register at the field if you wake up Saturday morning and hopefully it'll be sunny out. That you decide, hey, I want to go out and give it a shot. We take registrants there at the field, sign-ups and what have you. But yeah, you can find it on our Twitter, Facebook page, website. You'll see it on a number of the FM radio stations' websites this week. With banner ads and what have you, that'll be calling out the last training camp. So, pretty exciting time for us. This is the first leap into marketing the organization that my wife and I have done since we've taken ownership of the team, and we're excited to see kind of what the turnout is for this next weekend.
Awesome. Me and Erica wish you continued success. Thank you for coming on the show today. It's been entertaining, and we love your feedback. Especially on a coaching side of things. So you're welcome to come in next week if you'd like. Just give me a buzz. I know you're a busy man next weekend probably because of the tryouts and everything else. But any other time, just email me, and then we can set up and schedule for you and kind of work that out. So all our feedback from our audience last week was very very positive on your knowledge and everything else. So we appreciate you being on the show today.
Yeah, thanks for having me on, and I had a great time last week. I have a great time. I love talking football, obviously, and it's also a chance to get our organization out there a little bit more and be able to talk about women's football in general, not just the Majestics, but women's football in general. I know we didn't do much of that today, but it needs to be done more. And thank you for you guys doing what you do, because I wish people knew more about this sport and about women playing football. It's a great opportunity for a lot of people to take part in a great sport across male and female. And I look forward to the time to come on and talking about it. So thanks for having me.
No problem. So, Scott, enjoy your afternoon. I know you're not catching the Sunday night game, but we look forward to Monday night with the Russell Wilson show taking on Drew Brees and the Saints. So enjoy your afternoon and have a great one.
I will. Thank you very much, and go Hawks.
All right. Erica, any last words at this point? I know you got homework, so am I going to keep you any longer from your homework? any last words before we bail?
No, just it's been an interesting week with games. Like I said, I think we're seeing the separation here, I'm excited to see next week and see how that separation continues. It'll be a good picture of the playoffs. They'll really be cementing here soon, and so it'll be exciting to see the next couple weeks.
Yeah, and today was a really good. Like I said, your team played exactly almost mirror image of last week. Not so much in terms of the devastation mode, but they played pretty well. So we are seeing. Week 13, for me, week 13 and 14 are really, like to your point, it's really the clear picture as to who's going forward and obviously who's rebuilding and starting their 2014 campaign, technically.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah. Let's do a plug out there before we get out of here. We are having 15% off at the No Joke Football Shop. If you guys don't know what that is, take a look at it. It's at Zazzle.com/gridironbeauties. What it is, it's our website. It's an apparel website that we do to support the women's game. What we do is we customize shirts there. We do things that we're going to be going forward with in the next 24 to 36 months. We are on pace to either sponsor, support, or in some way help out players with some of the dues in the traditional game. And that's our goal, is to really support the game. And then on the marketing side of it, that also helps us with every shirt purchase that you make on there. That money is pulled out and it's recycled into sponsoring a player for a season, supporting a team locally, or helping out a team with some marketing aspect, whether it be marketing or photography or any of that thing, with, based on our network of connections that we have. So go to Zazzle.com/gridironbeauties. You get 15% off. Use the code WINTERWARMTH. WINTERWARMTH is the code. We also have a GoFundMe.com/NoJokeFootballFund. And that fund, you can donate as little as a dollar or any other amount that you want, and all that money is going to be donated in the same process as the website. So we don't make any money on the website in terms of revenue. We make the money to redistribute it to the women's sports, and obviously Gridiron being first and foremost. And this week I got reached out by some contacts with the Alice Morgan camp and the soccer at Realm of Things. And hopefully going forward, we will also try to help out the women's soccer realm, which is women's football in Europe. So we're working a little hard and a lot harder to get our name out there, and as well as to incorporate ourselves with the great athletes that play women's gridiron as well as women's soccer. And I know we reached out to Sam Gordon initially about a year ago. She was sporting our gear, and she's obviously going to do that going forward because she's going to play soccer as well, and we thought that was a good avenue to go with. So so at this point, you can go to Zazzle.com/gridironbeauties, and you can get a shirt, and you can customize it if you want to, or get it as is, as it's stored out on the website, and use your code WINTERWARMTH up to December 31st at that point. And there's daily specials on the website, so if you check every day, sometimes it's beyond 15%. Sometimes it's 20% off certain items. So if you go there daily, you can check out some of our specials. So we appreciate everybody participating with us today on the show. Scott McCarron, I know Erica's got a bail here too, Erica Lynn Anderson. And we will be here next weekend for a Gridiron Beauties Radio and week 14 of the NFL slate, as well as we should have a clear picture as to the female extreme football in Mexico, as what the playoffs are looking for December 1st. We should have a clearer picture for Gridiron New South Wales, the UTS Gridiron, the Phoenix squads as well. So two of those leagues should have a clearer picture based on congratulations to the rest of the squads that won their championships this this past weekend. And they're all on our Twitter feed timeline as well as the Facebook. So, Erica, any last-minute words before we bail?
No, just you can check out my blog at gridirongirl.org. And my Twitter is at PatsFangirl12. So check it out and tweet me, and I'll tweet back.
Now, and you also have the YouTube channel, right, that you just set up?
I do, yeah. It's actually, it's on my Twitter page. The link is on my Twitter profile, at PatsFangirl12. There's just the one video on there now, but I'll be adding more. So.
All right, so go check out Erica on YouTube. Make sure you interact with her during the week as well on anything that we talked about the show. You know, big Pats fan as well, so if you have anything to do with New England and want to have any questions, at PatsFansGirl12, you can dive in there, as well as GridironGirl.org. So for Oscar Lopez, Erica Lynn Anderson, we will see you next week on Gridiron Beauties Radio talking Week 14 NFL. Have a good night.
Bye.